is not available. She's off ill, and she has then submitted her apology. Now, according to the National Assembly Rule 159, we have to elect an acting chairperson in the absence of the chairperson of the committee. So that's the process we're going to embark on right away. The rule reads as such, Rule 159 on acting chairperson, says if the chairperson of the committee is absent or unable to perform the functions of the chairperson, the committee must elect another of its members as an acting chairperson. And number two of such reads as follows, an acting chairperson performs the functions and may exercise the powers of the chairperson. It is at this point that I would like to call upon any nominations for the acting chairperson from the honourable members. Honourable Fazgale.
Good morning, honourable members, staff and the department. I would like to also have the impression. I would like to nominate Honourable Mjobo as acting chairperson. Thank you.
Honourable Mjobo has been nominated as the acting chairperson. Honourable Graham.
Thank you. I'd like to second that.
Thank you, Honourable Graham. Then the name of Honourable Mjobo has been seconded. Are there any further nominations? In the absence of any further nominations, I'd like to call upon the acting chairperson, Honourable Mjobo, to take the chair.
Apologies from both the minister and the is because the cabinet committees that are sitting this week are dealing with some of the issues from our own department, which require the attention of the senior, most senior in the leadership of the department. The issue of a matter of public importance, issue of expropriation is not one, and some other issues of budget that are serving before the committee. I'm raising this because in the last meeting, the committee shared the displeasure in the absence of the crucial members of the senior leadership of the department, in the person of Minister and DG. I felt that I needed to indicate that before I do the two postponements. Even though it was true, I could say administrative bungling or confusion, but for me, when I inquired, I realized that it's probably a matter that requires the urgent attention of either the rules or the procedures of Parliament, because it was explained to the confusion that there was no request for the first order and the second order. And on further inquiry, it seemed that through practice, the department merely sends that which has been asked. Tapping from previous experience in my other life, for us it was mandatory through the rules that by certain date the department submits quarter one, by certain date quarter two, and therefore that did not create confusion. Let me therefore take the responsibility and apologize for that confusion, but invite the honourable members to also consider in the discussion of the internal procedures that it is not just a matter of practice, it's a matter of whether it's a rule or something that is prescriptive and instructive. My sincere apologies for that. It is not the intention of the department to undermine the committee in any way or to cause confusion in the manner of work. And if I'm not sure, Chair, whether to stop, but the presentation that is before us will be led by DDG MTS. Who will be taken as chair in the absence of teacher. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think we can start from the presentation.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, Chairperson, members of the committee. We are presenting once again the first and second quarters for 2019-20 financial year. The financial information is cumulative for the two quarters, and the non-financial information will be presented in two separate parts, quarters one and two. Quarter one is validated, quarter two is preliminary. We'll present first the non-financial information, and I move straight on to slide number five, and where we provide an overview of our mandate drawn from the Constitution, the various laws, in particular DIAMA, as well as the Act establishing the Construction Industry Development Board, the Council for the Belt Environment, and the Six Belt Environment Professional Council. We have also a number of policy mandates on which we draw our strategies, and they are articulated on the slide, and over which we are all familiar, including the white papers, which are now also undergoing development. I move on to slide number six, Chairperson and members of the committee. This is a program budget structure of the department. just to recap, DPW, the regulatory aspects of the department is covered in five separate programs. The first one is the administration. Number two is intergovernmental coordination, and that's made up of two branches. The one branch is the intergovernmental relations function, and then we also have a professional services function which services and looks at skills development. Program three is the extended public works program. Program four, with a long name, is essentially our policy branch, so we drive legislation and policy change. And program five is prestige policy. Just to remind members, the prestige policy oversees the prestige functions, so it has a customer relationship management arm, and it also develops the norms and standards for prestige, but the actual delivery of prestige work, maintenance or construction, as the case may be, takes place primarily on the right side, which is the property arm of the department. It's a ring-fenced element of the department. Called the property management trading entities inside the department is a ring-fenced to deliver on property management services, primarily regulated out of GIAMA, the Government Immovable Asset Management Act. And there we also have a program one, which is made up mainly of finance and supply chain. It does not have all the services in the program one of DPW, which I'll show on the next slide. Program two, three, four, five, and six reflect the infrastructure delivery management system, where the delivery of infrastructure commences with planning and then terminates with the decommissioning of an asset. And in the middle is construction, leasing in, leasing out, the maintenance of an asset register, and also operations where we maintain the building to increase its life cycle and maintain its relevance as an instrument for service delivery. So that's how the PMT is structured, its program structure, it almost reflects its delivery model in terms of the infrastructure delivery methodology. Moving on to slide number seven, the main boat, as it's called, is made up of the EPWP, the policy and prestige. And in the middle, we have corporate services. This is mainly a chairperson and members of the committee program one of DPW is a shared service. So we don't duplicate between the property reinvest business and the regulatory business of DPW. That the shared services serve the entire department. It's corporate services made up of human resources and technology primarily, governance, risk and compliance, intergovernmental coordination, and finance and supply chain management research primarily in the middle to serve the entire department. Then I move, Chairperson, on slide number eight onwards onto the non-financial performance information for the department. And just to recap, we are presenting slides, we are presenting quarters one and two, and this is somewhat a reflection of our process that internally we have our branches submit performance information, and we have timelines within which they must submit the performance information after the end of the quarter, and we commence with the verification process by our monitoring and evaluation unit. They essentially assess the portfolios of evidence. They verify the portfolio of evidence to make sure it's credible, and they make corrections with the branches. They set corrections through the branches to make sure that the information is complete. And when the M&E unit or the monitoring and evaluation unit completes its work, we have verified information that is complete. From there, it goes to our internal audit unit. The internal audit unit will ensure that the information, performance information, is validated, and they apply validation procedures, and then only does the information flow through to the executive committee and the minister and deputy minister, as well as to parliament for presentation. So we ensure that the information is reliable, is complete, accurate and valid, and we have explanations from any major variances. And quarter one has been through that process. Quarter two is still in progress, so the information is still preliminary. But I will deal with the extent to which there may be deviations in the later slides. Chairperson, I move on to slide 10. And slide 10 is a code where we reflect the level of performance. And we've also color-coded our slides to reflect our areas of weakness as well as our areas of strength. That the red is where there's no achievement at all, is normally between 0 and 10%. The orange, where the progress is below 50%, that means some activity has started but not yielded any output. And then we have between 50% and above, and between 50 and 90% is marked in yellow, which is still reasonably good performance. If there is some output, but not the full achievement of the target, And an example is given there, which was house, it would be 6 out of 10 in terms of that output. And the green is above 90%, and that is deemed to be acceptable performance. And those are the targets that are in green that are counted as achieved. Anything outside the green is counted as not achieved, actually. So, Chairperson, moving on to Program 1 in DPW. Program 1 is a sub-program called Management, and the first indicator is initiatives undertaken to accelerate the transformation agenda of the department. These are a multitude of initiatives to promote the advancement of women, as well as youth and other targeted groups. And we have 9 initiatives in each quarter, and these were achieved in both quarters 1 and 2. The second performance indicator talks to the investigation of allegations of mismanagement, fraud and corruption, and we are required to investigate these within a statutory period of 30 days. In both quarters 1 and 2, the target was achieved. There were 13 allegations in quarter 1 and 8 in quarter 2, and all of those were investigated within the 30-day period. Indicator number 3 is the number of interventions recommended resulting from fraud risk management. We've undertaken a strategy in the department to prevent the incidence of foreign corruption, and in the first quarter of this year we had no targets. In the second quarter we focused on the prestige environment, the entire prestige environment, and we looked at all the SIU investigations for the last 10 years as well as those in the department in the last 5 years to identify the fraud risks, and we came up with a fraud mitigation plan for prestige. So this is what has transpired here, and the target was achieved in quarter 2. With respect to page 12, I move on to, with respect to the settlement of invoices within 30 days, our target is 100%. We achieved 97% in quarter 1 and 95% in quarter 2. We do have a slight delay in the certification of invoices by line managers, and we're improving that. Our target is 100%. That's where we want to go. The change in the baseline of irregular expenditure is not a target in the first two quarters. I move on to SCM. Percentage of bids awarded within 56 working days. Our target is 100%, and we achieved that. I move on to quotations issued within 30 days. Our target is 90%, and in quarter 1 we achieved 98%. In quarter 2 we achieved 83%, and we had a somewhat 7% deviation given that the response to the market was not great in certain instances, and we have to go back to the market in order to ensure we have minimum 3 quotes to remain regular. And that costs us time. So we have a slight deviation there. Moving on to slide number 13. This is our awards to designated groups. We have a percentage procurement spend for bids and also the rand value spent on designated groups. And in these particular quarters, we've had in quarter 1.
I'm
having a hot flash. Mine's age-related, not necessarily. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm on slide 13. These targets on page 13 talk to are the awards of wins to designated groups. And what has transpired here is unusually not met our targets. We always exceed them. And we haven't met our targets in this particular quarter. We have 80% actual, and what is the target? And we've had difficulty in having the level of interest in all instances from the designated groups. In quarter 2, we performed particularly poorly at 38%, but we expect it to improve as the year unfolds. And we also have similar targets in PMPE, which we'll raise there for discussion. Moving on to slide number 14, I'm now talking to corporate services. Corporate services have a number of technologies related in HR performance indicators. The first one being the percentage of funded prioritized vacancies filled as per the approved recruitment plan. And 70% as opposed to 100% and 75% as opposed to 100% in quarter 2 of those posts were filled within 6 months. So we're under target between 20 and 25%. And that's because we have a moratorium, and we had a moratorium in the department on the filling of posts after the change of minister. So that did affect the achievement of the target. Moving on to the next item that is a target in this quarter is modules enhanced. These are enhancement of existing IT modules. And we had a target of 1 in quarter 1 and 1 in quarter 2, and these were not achieved. that apparently all the resources were focused on areas of the business that were considered a priority, which is the lease in, which went live in all our regions, and our immovable asset register, which went live in 3 regions. So the focus in those areas caused us not to then achieve our targets in the other areas, in schedule maintenance, condition assessment, and the other areas depicted at the bottom of slide number 14. So it was a change of focus which resulted in non-achievement, and during the year we want to catch up on the underachievement here, Chairperson and members of the committee. Slide number 15, I move on to corporate services as well. In terms of a single asset register, it's not a target for this quarter. The second target, an indicator, is the percentage of fraud and corruption misconduct cases subject to disciplinary processes. 100% was achieved, which means that all referred cases are followed through with disciplinary action. The last item on slide number 15 is default judgments. They will achieve 100%. The department suffered in the past with default judgments being taken against it because of poor legal processes. We've improved on this by preventing all default judgments against the department through our legal system. Moving on to slide number 16, this is intergovernmental coordination. It's our IGR branch. They have a number of performance review reports for the sector program of action presented to MINMAT. In quarter 2, they had a target of 1. They did not achieve it. That what we had was MINMAT recommended there should be alignment between the ATPs of the national and provincial departments and the priorities of the city administration. And as a result, this target was not achieved. They will have to catch up as well in quarter 3 and quarter 4. With respect to the number of agreements signed for joint service delivery with IGR partners, they targeted 5 in quarter 2. They did not achieve any of them because of the fact that the agreements were not signed by the municipalities. But they developed 6, so there was good progress there. But they were not concluded because they lacked signatures. They're still under consultation. The further targets then, I move on to slide number 17. And slide number 17 depicts our professional services branch, which is also part of program 2. They have a first performance indicator that's relevant for this quarter. It's a number of provinces with state capacity building in the aligned to the skills pipeline program. And they, what they've done is they've developed a baseline report. There is a target there, and this report was in fact developed, and the capacity building program also designed. So they achieved their target in this first and second quarters. The next target is at the bottom. You see that the second and third targets are not applicable for this quarter. They're quarter 3 and 4 targets. So I move to the last one. They have this performance indicator for a public works academy established. And the target for quarters 1 and 2 is a funding model to Treasury for a public expenditure review submitted in partnership and an MOU developed. Now, what has transpired as Chairperson, members of the committee, this is not achieved. But they're not working in this direction. The minister has indicated that she would like to explore different options to achieve a skills pipeline program other than the department establishing its own academy, such as perhaps partnership with universities or other means, given the financial restraints that we are burdened with. If we don't have the money for that kind of luxury, there are other means and ways, and the minister has indicated we should explore them before moving in the direction of an academy. Then I move on to slide number 18, Chairperson and members of the committee, is the Extended Public Works Program. The Extended Public Works Program had a target of 245,374 work opportunities in quarter 1 and 490,748 in quarter 2. They over-exceeded on both, 390,000 and 670,000 respectively in quarters 1 and 2. And they have undertaken measures to improve the reporting on the system. Sometimes it works against us. We're dependent on all public bodies who participate in the program. So this particular quarter, these 2 quarters have been good for the program. The regret and the underachievement is with respect to the youth and persons with disabilities, where with youth, our target of 55% is still some 20% way off the target. And the youth, the person with disabilities has not achieved a target of 2%. And I did raise this with my colleague, that they hope that during the course of the year, that this particular target would iron itself out, and we see the achievement of 55% for the youth and 60% for women and 2% for persons with disabilities over the years. So the target was achieved and even exceeded in EPWP, but the break up between the youth and persons with disabilities was not achieved. Moving on to the next slide, number 19, number of NGOs. We contract the non-profit organizations to implement the non-state sector program. So we support those. And we targeted 350 in quarter two for support. We only achieved 111. And in the M&E processes, we know there's a lot more that might have been reported, but there's only proof and evidence of the 311. So we only include 111, and we found it a delay in the finalization of the legal processes, and this led to delays in contracting the NGOs, that a memoranda of agreement was not signed on time. So we expect this to fix itself up during the year as well. And we're not really worried. My colleagues behind me and Mr. Anderson will explain how they will reach the annual target. Then we also provide public bodies with technical support. This is a very important intervention to ensure that the reporting is complete by the public bodies with respect to work opportunities, as well as the fact that the reporting is also credible. EPWP provides a support to public bodies with respect to credible reporting into the reporting system. And then finally, for EPWP, they have a target of sector convergence. This is very important, that at present you have the ministerial determination, which is a very important directive in how to implement EPWP, and there are a number of other position papers with respect to EPWP, but given that this is a national program, they are seeking to develop one EPWP policy for the country that covers everything. So it's a sector convergence kind of program, and this is a target for the year, and they have a draft framework developed for consultation, and they're very much on track for this year. I move on to program number four for DPW. This is a so-called policy branch, and the first performance indicator towards the development of a public works bill in the long term. The target for the current year is the development of a white paper during the current year, and in quarters one and two, this branch ought to develop a policy options document. And what has transpired is that, as well as a green paper, which is coming in quarter three, and this has not been done, and we've had certain capacity limitations here, and also the need to have a consensus with the minister, that the minister has indicated a preference to bypass the development of new white papers and to go straight into the development of a bill. So this branch is receiving new instructions on how to proceed going forward. And as a department, we've also noted the need to capacitate this branch with the relevant skills and an individual who bring a kind of policy expertise in the construction and property sectors. So we are currently in abeyance here with respect to this particular target, given the need for the minister to give a policy direction to the development of a public works bill or legislation going forward. The Expropriation Act, in the second quarter, the minister's approval with the draft expropriation bill was required. In fact, the target talks to draft expropriation bill developed. This was developed and the minister's approval to process the expropriation bill was also effected. Target number three is the Construction Industry Development Board. We were required to develop amendments to the CIDB Act. In that quarter, and amendments were developed. Target number four was the Council for the Bill Environment Amendment Bill. And in the second quarter, we were required to draft the Bill Environment Policy and submit to the minister. And this was developed but not submitted to the minister. So we marked them in yellow because we have evidence that the work was done, but not done on time for the minister to effect approval. So it's in yellow and partially achieved. Moving on to Prestige, which is the final program in the DPW. I move on to State Events, which is the second target. The first indicator is not due in that quarter. Number of state events supported with movable structures. The target in total for the first two quarters was four, and they achieved five, although four in quarter one and one in quarter two, so overall they achieved their target in the first two quarters. I move on to the third indicator, which is the provision of movable assets within 60 days. There's a target of 85% of movable assets provided within 60 days. after approval by prestige clients, and these were achieved in terms of the percentage. And the last performance indicator is the infrastructure worklist, which is a planning document to serve prestige clients. It's not a quarter one or quarter two target. So that takes me to the conclusion of the DPW chairperson and move on to slide number 23, which is now the PNTE. And I move on to the first quarter PNTE target, number 23, page number 23 or slide 23. The first indicator talks to the percentage of compliant invoices settled within 30 days. It's similar to the one I did for DPW. And here we have 77% achieved in quarter one and 86% achieved in quarter two. And what we found is our client departments who we depend on for funding of their projects, that the confirmation of funding was not timely, and also the central supplier database at Treasury, the information was not updated timely by suppliers, and it delays the payments to them. And also there were a number of disputes with suppliers, and that results in delayed verification and certification by us, and we are then compelled to withhold the payment rather than make an incorrect payment. So these resulted in delays in making payments. But I also want to add one more thing, Chair and members of the committee, that we've set up a virtual consequence management unit to provide high-level oversight in the department with respect to how the system is working, because our problem is about consequence management. And we're not setting up any new units, because we already have an anti-corruption unit and a labor relations unit, and management is already responsible for discipline in their areas. But we're providing high-level oversight. And so far, we've identified three instances through public complaints where the department did not pay on time. And we followed through why payment was not made on time, and we found this was complacency. And we've instructed the managers responsible to charge the individual responsible for making late payments. So we're starting consequent management processes in this area in particular. So of course, it will extend to everything in the department. I then moved to percentage birds awarded within 56 days. They had also been poor in this month. We target the bird and the awarding of a bird in 56 days. So that's a CIGB standard. And we only have 20%, it's under 20% in quarter one and 33% in quarter two. That we've had a number of challenges here. And client confirmation of funds is one problem, but also we're having security clearance issues with the state security agency that's coming in late, so it prevents us from making an award. We've cured that because we are told that we should only acquire security clearance for companies working on national security points, whatever you might call it. One of those words. And then also we have the risk assessment report. We sometimes take risk assessment, and this is important not to issue an award to the wrong organization. We use outside companies to sometimes give us risk assessments on major projects, and these take time. Those risk assessments sometimes disqualify, but so this has taken time and delayed the process. And we also have resubmissions that our bid committees receive bids for recommendation and award, and they send it back to the line function because of missing information. So these are some of the administrative reasons, but we will improve as the quarters unfold, and we've taken heed that this performance is not acceptable. In fact, it's a regression from last year. So we want to improve there. And moving on to slide number 24 is percentage of quotations awarded. This one we achieved in quarter two. We've come closer to achieving that target of 80%. We had 74% in quarter two, so there is improvement there, and the reasons are similar. But with quotations, we're finding that sometimes the market does not respond. You receive two quotes, and you cannot award with two quotes, you need three. And we go out and out again until we have three. And that's part of the delay. So we'll be thinking about it, and we want to also improve these areas and ensure that we meet our 80% target. With respect to our targeted contracting, the last two indicators on slide 24 is percentage of birds awarded to designated groups. The first one is the number of birds, the second one is the rand value. And they measure the similar thing, and what has happened is we achieved the target. We had 87% with respect to birds in quarter two, and 83% with the in the rand value in quarter two. So we're doing well there, as we traditionally always do. Slide number 25 moves on to program two. This is the planning aspect of the property business. And the first indicator talks to the number of government precinct development plans aligned with a rural and urban integrated development plan. We did Kimberley and we achieved our target in terms of alignment for quarter two. Number of sites established for development, these are new sites, and this quarter two target is a site established with agriculture, forestry and fisheries with the depth, and this was achieved. And then target number three is a number of concept designs completed by identified user departments. And we targeted two and achieved two concept designs completed. This is for data, justice, and Kimberley. Moving on to the slide number 26. This is also program two, which is a planning program in the property business. Percentage of feasibility studies within scheduled time frame. We target the 90%. We are achieving 92 and 100%. These feasibility studies are important. And before you undertake any construction or any major property development initiative, the feasibility study must precede it. So that is what this is about, and we've achieved it. Then valuations are also important. The valuation very often it precedes the disposal, for example, or a transfer of an asset. And our target is 90 there, and in quarter one we performed poorly at 60%, and we recovered in quarter two to go to more than 100%. I believe that some of the quarter one work was then completed in quarter two. That is why we exceeded the time frame, but we achieved our target of 90%. Moving on to target indicator number three is percentage of responsive disposal requests approved. So this is not a target in this quarter. Number four is a custodial asset management plan in the chair. This is a very important instrument for us. You know, we have the user asset management plan. The user asset management plan we receive from all client departments. We do it with them, we support them, and this reflects their infrastructure needs over the medium term. So we can plan for it, and we can also budget with Treasury for the money in that regard. Now, that's a user asset management plan. This is a custodial plan, which is the integration of all the user plans. So basically, this is our overall infrastructure delivery plan. And this must be submitted to Treasury during the quarter. And this was done and achieved. Then I moved on to the last indicator on slide 26, number of buildings performance measured in identified performance areas. We targeted 200 in both quarters 1 and 2, and we achieved and overachieved in quarter 2. Now, Chair, I just want to make mention that these building assessments are not condition assessments. They're more the performance of the building in terms of light and water, energy consumption, and that kind of thing. So, that's also important for planning purposes for cost effectiveness. So we've achieved that very well. And that program is also unfolding and it's continuing from last year's success. Program number three is construction program management. This is our delivery of construction or delivery of accommodation to client departments through the construction of new buildings. And also refurbishment and major maintenance takes place through construction programs. So that's what this is about. The first performance indicator starts off with design. We targeted 26 in quarters 1 and 2, and we met and exceeded the target in terms of design. That's where it all starts. Number of approved infrastructure projects ready for tender, getting them ready for tender. We've also exceeded those targets. Number of infrastructure sites handed over for construction. We achieved it in quarter 1 and quarter 2. We came somewhat short by a few, but one will see the extent to which we exceeded in quarter 1. It compensates for our underperformance in quarter two. So overall, we achieved our target between the two quarters. Number of infrastructure projects completed. We targeted 116 for the year and 25 and 58 in quarters one and two. In quarter two, we came short. We've had 36 achieved as opposed to a target of 58 because of late approval and confirmation of funds by user departments. And we're also finding difficulty where we're managing the poor performance of contracts. It also affects us. But generally speaking, that we're having greater levels of project monitoring and support. And we've seen an overall improvement in this area over the last 3 years with this partner. With respect to construction management, I continue on slide number 28. There's a number of infrastructure projects completed within an agreed period that in quarters 1 and 2, we only partially achieved. And this is also a similar reason as the ones in the previous slide. As well as a number of infrastructure projects completed within approved budget. These are the first two indicators on slide number 28 that we did not achieve our targets here. They are partially achieved mainly because of incapacity of contractors implementing projects. out of time and affecting us out of budget. And also, one might add also the late approval and confirmation of funds by user departments is also something that's affecting us. So we are managing these risks in terms of our relationship with our client and confirmation of funds on time, and also our project monitoring on contractors is becoming, as I mentioned, more stringent. But it will always be a risk, it's something we have to manage. And then finally, with respect to EPWP, we've had work opportunities of 8,200 per year. In quarter two, we almost met the target. In fact, we are in the green above 90%. In quarter one, we failed miserably, achieving 539 as opposed to 1,800. And we've had a number of cancelled and delayed projects, which has affected the ability of the department to identify and create those jobs within the realm of construction projects. But I also have my colleague here, the DG Construction Project Management, who will want to end after I presented on that particular matter. Slide number 29, moving on to program 4. It's for Real Estate Management Services. Real Estate Management Services Chair is our leasing in of private buildings and the leasing out of state-owned buildings. So it does, it's in the business of leasing. So it delivers infrastructure to our clients through leasing in of private buildings, but it also leases out state-owned buildings at a profit or revenue. So the first indicator is the number of lease agreements signed within the time frame. There were very few, and they were partially achieved. In fact, last year, these targets picked up in quarter three and four. Last year, we had more than 600 signed over the period of the year. So this will pick up. The program has not reflected much. The targets are, in fact, very low in quarters one and two, and they were partially achieved. I move on to the second indicator. Is the number of identified vacant surplus state-owned properties let out. And what I want to say is, Chair, the target was achieved there, but we also recognize that in terms of the annual target of 70, it doesn't reflect the quantum of properties that require leasing out and that are vacant. So we're running a program, and we plan to source in some skills from the private sector to both identify and let out state-owned properties that are vacant, and also to deal with the whole backlog of applications that we do have. So we recognize the need for a broader program, and perhaps we can also come and share it with the committee at some point in time. And moving on to slide number 30 is the small harbors that they achieved just less than 50% of their target of 1,000 in terms of creating jobs in the small harbor space. And what they do is they normally conclude leases with contractors or at least with companies and restaurant owners and other facilities at these ports or these small harbors. And in terms of the lease agreement, the lessee is required to create a certain number of jobs. And this was affected by the fact that we have a new letting out framework, which is the main enabler for these leases, and the letting out framework was then delayed in terms of its conclusion. And this held up this particular program, but we want to hold this program to account in quarters 3 and 4 as the year unfolds to achieve the target of 2,000 for the year as a whole. And as a year, they ought to be at 50% now, but they are 25%. So we want to push them and have a better performance for the year as a whole. Moving on to slide number 31. Slide 31 is dealing with program 5. Program 5 is the immovable asset register. And I move on to the second performance indicator. The first one is not due in this quarter. Percentage of assets updated on the register for completed infrastructure projects, 100% was done. Chair, I just want to explain what this means. That our asset register, we count the land, we count everything that's there, but we also construct new buildings, and then we fail to take those new construction projects onto the register. It sounds simple, but it's something that slipped through the cracks in the past, so it's leading to audit qualification, and now we're doing that. We achieve 100% of that particular requirement. The second indicator that's due in this quarter is the number of land parcels vested. This vesting process, Chair, members of the committee, is between government departments. That after 1994, the land would go to, would follow the use. So if it's a school, it will follow a province. If it's a police station, it will follow national. National would own it. And that's what happens. But very often, land is vacant. It's got no discernible use. So the provinces, the national and other users sit together to decide in whom it must vest. So that's the vesting process, and we underachieve, especially in quarter one, at something like 25% in quarter one, although we came close to 80% in quarter two, and we are reliable on DLR for the assessing process. They maintain a system called the Land Administration Web. So our department is ensuring we have better access to the Land Administration Web, and we have better IGR, intergovernmental relations with the other government stakeholders, so we can rest quicker. So we're working there on a partially achieved target. The number of immovable assets physically verified to validate existence. This one, Chair, is not where we want it to be. In the first quarter, we only verified 1,000 out of a target of some 6,000, but in quarter two, we seem to have shot over and achieved it overall. But this requires a lot of capacity, but we seem to be at least doing okay compared to last year. The number of provincial immovable assets registered assessed for compliance, we targeted 2 and we achieved 3 in this quarter, so we're good there. And then finally, we have a number of asset registers we want to incorporate into a single national database. And there we are a bit slow. We ought to have included 2 provinces into a national database with our national asset register. And we've not achieved it in this quarter because of capacity constraints. And we want to support this branch, the asset register branch, to bring the necessary IT capacity in to ensure that as we get to the end of the year, we have more of a semblance of a single national asset register. So the target was not achieved in quarter two. We ought to have brought 2 provincial registers into 1 database. We've not achieved it. And we will then mark that space for quarters 3 and 4. Slide number 32. Program 6 is facilities management. It's the last program for the property business. And the chairperson, the facilities management is the one that maintains the buildings that citizens ultimately use. So they're important in maintaining the quality of the building and the usability of the building for service delivery. And they do the maintenance work mainly. And also they do energy saving and that kind of thing. It's about the operation of the assets. And the first performance indicator is number of facilities with planned maintenance contracts in place. So what we're saying is we don't have to go out every week to fix a tap and a lift, that we have a facilities management contract where we have a one-stop shop supplier to deal with a particular building or set of buildings. And in these 2 quarters, we exceeded our targets. We had a target of 100 and 150. For the first 2 quarters, 350. We've exceeded basically 800. So we've done very well here in moving on to more of a planned maintenance strategy. This will hold us in good stead in managing our buildings at the end level. Then the percentage of unscheduled maintenance incidents resolved within time frame. We targeted 15% and we achieved just 3%. Then we obviously have a problem. It means that we are not keeping to our promise to our clients in terms of resolving problems within time frame. And what we find here is that we have huge system non-compliance. We have a system, a help desk system called Works For You, and that system is not reporting adequately. And I would like to think and also hold ourselves to account, and then the DDG, the corporate services, will also hear this out. And by the end of the year, we can't have this excuse that the system is under-reporting, that we're doing better than 3%, but the system's not reporting. And by the end of the year, we need to resolve this problem and improve our performance. Then, Chair, I'm moving on to 3 performance indicators, which is talking to climate change and the reduction of greenhouse gases. The first one is a reduction in energy consumption. And we targeted 38 million kilowatt hours reduction in quarter one and 38,750,000 in quarter two. And in both quarters, we underachieved. But you recall, Chair and members of the committee, last year we overachieved this particular target. And we're saying that it's because we're receiving municipal bills 3 months late, and we haven't reported the full extent of our achievement, except for the bills we have in hand. So we'd like this to be assessed on an annual basis. It is a fair reflection. In fact, last year, as I say, we overachieved our targets here with the energy savings. Then I'm moving on to kilowatt hours renewable energy generated. Last year we reported that we also didn't achieve this last year, and we reported that our systems and our program for renewable energy was very much in the process level. We were not ready to generate renewable, to generate energy. But now we are ready, and I hope that it doesn't sound like a further escalation of the excuse. We've set up these PV, solar PV on the rooftops of all these government buildings, and we are ready to begin that savings process. But we are not measuring it, or we are unable to measure it because of our inability to accurately measure a credible saving. So we're installing these smart meters in all these buildings so that in the subsequent quarters we can begin to measure an accurate level of the saving. So we don't have any performance to report yet. It's been very slow, but we hope to improve as the year unfolds and to report something by the end of the year. And then finally, Chairperson, is reduction in water consumption is 1.5 million and 3.5 million kiloliters. And in both instances, we far, by far exceeded the saving, and we very much doing well with that particular energy saving program, the water saving part. Then overview, Chair, can I move on to slide number 33? I have quarter one and quarter two for DPW on the left and the right hand side on slide number 33. And what we're saying is that a number of our programs have done well. That you see that in DPW in quarter one, the professional services is not doing great, mainly because of that academy that's currently on hold. That the others are doing okay too well in DPW. Then in quarter two, we've had a problem with our intergovernmental relations function, where they have not achieved their targets. In particular, their agreements with IGR partners, especially municipalities, have not been consummated, and we're focusing on doing that. And then EPWP was unable to achieve the target for the designated groups. These are two designated groups of youth and persons with disabilities, and also had not contracted the number of NPOs that we targeted during the period. And our policy branch is not performing with respect to the Public Works Bill and the white papers in support of it, given the fact that they are awaiting new direction from our minister. So that is a picture with respect to DPW of what's performing and not performing on slide 33. And if I move to slide number 34, you see where there's a blank, that means they don't have the targets there. And the user demand management is not doing these quarters. And you can see finance and SCM has not performed there in quarter one. It is mainly because of our inability to meet the targets with respect to the bus that is bringing us down. And then with respect to FM, especially, and RAIR, the asset register program, the FM in particular, been the energy saving program, that's not reaching the target. And also we're having another problem in that we are not turning around the request from clients within the agreed time frame. The efficiency indicator, we're not performing well there. And then in the small harbors and REMs, we have performance challenges there in small harbors with the number of work and work opportunities created. And then FM in program 6, we also have challenges there with respect to the same energy saving and generation of energy, as well as efficiency targets with respect to client services. We're not turning around client requests on time. So that's where generally our problems are over the quarters 1 and 2. And on slide, the next slide would be 35. It gives an overall view of DPW and PMT. That in quarter 1, DPW performed at 75%, and in quarter 2, DPW went down to 53%. And in quarter 1, PMT was at 50%, and it improved to 56%. So that's where we're at in terms of the overall performance, Chairperson. In fact, the item on the block on the top, the 55.5 and 50, what it designates is what the performance was before it was validated, when it was preliminary. It gives you an idea whether our branches are providing credible information before we audit it. And what it says that DPW's performance actually improved from 55 to 75 after we verified it. And normally it's the other way around. And with PMT, it stayed the same, which means that what the branches were submitting was not far from what it ought to be the reality. Yes, so that's the overall view for DPW and PMT, Chairperson. I move on to slide number 36 to give a quick overview of the risks. And these risks are the top 10 risks in the department. The first five, in effect, one or two risks are both common to DPW and PMT, but this is what they are. These are the risks, we call them strategic risks because they are long-term, and also they talk to the sustainability of the organization. They're not operational in nature. They are the issues that should keep us awake at night. And the first one is the inadequate service delivery leading to the erosion of our mandate. And this is a sustainability issue, is that the fact These are risks, Chair, as I say, they're not facts. They are risks. They are possible uncertainties that we need to grapple with as we run the organization. I'm just walking across the road, there's a risk one can get knocked over. But it's not going to happen, but if you're not watching, it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the kind of risks that we face, is that many of our client departments, as we use the Department of Home Affairs, indicated that they'd like to provide their own accommodation to themselves a few weeks ago in Parliament, because they're not happy with our service. That's the kind of thing that, because we're not rendering the service at the right level, that it could erode our mandate. The second one is the compliance risk, is that we are breaching key legislation, that we, the PFMA and GIAMA example, and that we're not providing an optimal service delivery that breaches legislation in general, and also the levels of mismanagement and fraud and corruption we pick up in the department points to there being a risk in this particular regard. And then thirdly is a lack of good governance to ensure accountability for the public works sector, is that there is, in a sense, an inability to manage the public works sector in its diverse components because of the extent to which our IGR function operates, the level of control we have over the sector as a whole. Number four is the untransformed built environment discipline, the construction industry and property sector. And this is very important, because what we're saying is that one of our goals is to achieve transformation of the construction and property sectors. And the risk is that our programs are not transforming those sectors. So we need to mitigate those risks and transform them. Five is the credibility of the Extended Public Works Program. It's a national program to alleviate poverty and deal with unemployment. But because it's a national program and many public bodies report false creation of jobs or they report an incompletion creation of jobs and you have audit findings against the program, it detracts from the credibility of this very national and important program. So that's what we say is that in DPW, these are the issues that keep the management awake at night and that we need to be working towards mitigating these risks. And we're saying that the top three, the first three are still high. And in the first two quarters, you'll see the extent to which we're mitigating the risk. Each quarter should be minimum 25%. And by quarter two, it should be 50%. We're more or less there, but the transformation is not working very well, and the compliance is still not working well, and our risk levels are still high for the first three, although we're making some progress with EPWP because of the work that our EPWP program is doing to support the public bodies to create credible reporting systems. So we're reducing that risk, we're more at the medium range. And if I move to PMTE, the first one is similar, Chairperson, in the erosion. In fact, the example I gave is more in tune with the PMTE business, is the erosion of the mandate. Number two is inadequate maintenance and safeguarding of state assets. As you see quite clearly, that in the organization, many of our buildings are not in the condition they ought to be in. In fact, my colleagues would be able to give percentages about the assessment of our buildings, that many of them are just fair, that they're fair for use, but they're not great. And it also gives a negative experience to the user. If it's a court or home affairs building, it gives a negative experience. And there is a problem that's also the product of a false economy, that you see the user charges that are paid to the department to keep a building going is about 20% the amount one would pay to a private company for occupying the same space.
Mm-hmm.
So we have less money to maintain a building at a good standard. And if we have mismanagement and we overshoot the budget, it creates our own problems. So all of those things are dynamics we need to measure. And then inadequate delivery of national priorities, and we saw it in our performance, that South Africa is a signatory to the Climate Change Accord. And if we, in our third year, we are struggling to generate energy as the Department of Public Works, then we need to manage that risk. And that's some of the areas that we're not saving enough energy. And we need to run these national programs. So that's some of the priorities of government that we're not attending to, and it's also job creation. That today I reported our job creation targets, we didn't achieve them in our branches. That if we don't achieve them, we're not contributing to the government priorities. So that's our concern. Then we look at the financial viability of the PMTE, number four, on slide 38. That it's a fact that the PMTE has got 5.3 billion rand worth of debtors, that other government departments owe us today 5.3 billion rand, and they're not paying. And half of that belongs to prior years. So we have 2.5 billion rand that's owed to us by other client departments. That's unacceptable. And what it means is that with that low tariff we receive for accommodation, as well as the fact that we're carrying financially many government departments, It tells you that we have a sustainability issue, and if we were a private company, our banks would pull our loans in. So we have a problem, but because we are a government department, we are able to sustain ourselves. So that's a challenge we need to deal with, and the CFO will also reflect on it. And number five is the inability to maintain a reliable asset register. So we have mitigated this risk somewhat. And if you don't have an asset register, you've got no business intelligence as a property owner and a custodian. But now we do have that. We reduce that risk from high to medium. But we still have an audit qualification. But the audit qualification is mainly of an accounting nature, because we have a register that's substantially now becoming complete. So we do have a line of sight to the assets we do own, but that used to be also a strategic risk, but we are improving there. So those are the things that keep us awake at night, and it also talks to our performance. You can see the alignment in the areas we underperform is the areas where we have higher risk. So we need to mitigate those going forward, Chairperson, and ensure that we improve our risk maturity level. So Chair, now we move on to the financial section. For quarters 1 and 2 for DPW and PNC, and my colleague is coming forward to present that. You want to add, Luanda? Thank you. You can come forward. Manza, if from there you can do it.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much.
Morning. I'm going to present the financial performance for the period ended 30 September 2019. Now, at the end of September 2019, the department has spent 3.8 billion against the budget of 7.8 billion. Now, in terms of the program, without showing the economic classification of the program, program one with the budget of 511,219,000 was spent. The expenditure is equivalent to 43%. Now, what we also went further is to compare the expenditure against the money that we have drawn. Because on a monthly basis, we'll be drawing money from National Treasury. Now, for the end of September for Program 1, we have drawn 247 million, but the expenditure is 219. Now, it means it leaves us with a positive balance of 27 million. Now, the details in terms of the areas of underspending the economic classification will be in the summary for the department. Program 2 with a budget of 56 million, expenditure 28 million, equivalent to 51%. Against the drawings of 32, the positive balance is 3.4 million, which is within the Treasury guidelines. Expanded public works, 2.7 billion budget, expenditure at the end of September, 1.2 billion. And against the drawings, we have the balance of 116 million that was not spent. The money that was not spent under EPWP is mainly relating to the transfers which were withheld due to non-compliance by the provinces and municipalities. Now, once they comply, then the money will be rescheduled to be transferred in the following month. Program 4, budget of 4.4 billion, expenditures end of September, 2.2 billion, equivalent to 50%. Then the unspent against the drawing is 4 million, which is within the Treasury guidelines. Program 5, 119 million budget, expenditure 49, equivalent to 41%. The variance against the drawing is 21 million. This is mainly under goods and services, and is relating to the budget which was prioritized for the inauguration. Now, the slide number 41 just shows how much money is allocated for program. You can see program 4 is 55% because of the bulk of the transfers to PMT and the entities. EPWP program 3 is about 36%, it's also because of the incentives transfers. Program 1, 8%. Program 8%. Program 5, 1%. Program 2, with a small budget, is equivalent to 0%. Now, the slide 42, this is a summary of the department per economic classification to say it is the same spending as the one presented in the previous slide, but here we are showing departmentally to say if you have the budget of 557 under compensation of employees, how much was the expenditure? For compensation of employees, the expenditure was 247 million. Against the drawings of 267 million, the unspent budget is 20 million. The reason for underspending under compensation of employees is for two areas. The posts which were prioritized for filling but could not be filled because of the moratorium, and the posts that were vacated during the financial year. If there is a delay, automatically you will have a positive balance under compensation of employees. Goods and services, budget of 451 million, expenditure at the end of September, 180 million, equivalent to 40%. Comparing to the drawings of 253, there is a 72 million that was not spent under goods and services. Now, the areas of underspending, it will be under program one, under the item for communication, computer services, and office accommodation. Among others, it is because of the delay in the receipt of the invoices. For program three, EPWP, it is under the outsourced services, where the department has a contract, but there is a delay in terms of the invoicing from the service provider. Program five, also state function, as indicated, the underspending relating to the budget is prioritized for the inauguration. Transfers and subsidies, 6.8 billion budget. The expenditure at the end of September is 3.3 billion. Against the drawings, we have 79 million that was not spent. And this 79 million is relating to EPWP for the transfers which were withheld. Machinery and equipment, 23 million. The expenditure at the end of September, 11 million, equivalent to 50%. The underspending is within the guideline. Now the last slide, it just shows the budget to say in your economic classification, where is the bulk of the budget? Now in slide 43, you'll see that 87% of the budget for the department is sitting under the transfer. Then you'll have 6 and 7% under compensation of employees and goods and services, and machinery and equipment accounting for 0%. And if we go to 87% of the transfer, it will be in slide number 55 to show how much is allocated under the transfer. And you can see CIDB, 76 million, 38 million transferred, equivalent to 50%. CBE, 52 million, 26 million transferred, equivalent to 50%. Agrima, budget of 31, 15 million transferred, equivalent to 50%. EPWP integrated grant for provinces, 437 million budget, 231 transferred, equivalent to 53%. EPWP integrated grant for municipality, 730 million, 182 million transferred, equivalent to 25%. EPWP non-state sector, 750 million, 390 transferred, equivalent to 52%. Management fee linked to the non-state sector, 44 million, 100% transferred. EPWP social sector, 430 million, 297 million transferred, equivalent to 69%. PMTE, 4.2 billion budget, 2.1 billion, equivalent to 50%. Parliamentary Villages Management Board, 10 million, 10 million transferred, equivalent to 100%. IDT, 5 million, and 5 million transferred, 100%. The total budget for transfers, or the earmark budget, is 6.7 billion. 3.3 has been transferred, equivalent to 49%. And that will be the end of DPW financial performance. Thanks.
Good morning, Acting Chairperson, Honourable Members, SPL, and your colleagues. I'll take you through the financial performance for PMTE. The first slide in 47, slide 47, reflects the budget and cash flow statement on revenue. We have a total expected revenue of 17.1 billion, with the actual amount received 7.8 billion, which then represents 46%.
I won't go into details, I'll just highlight the key areas there. On accommodation charges, which is a state-owned, we underperformed there. There is a variance of 257 million. It's due to clients not paying on time. We are then projecting to receive also 6.7 million by year end. Then the other area that is a little bit concerning is accommodation charges, freehold, which is a client project. We are not doing well there. We are expecting to receive 2.5 million. I mean, the total budget is 2.5 million, and we've actually received 714 million, which represents 28%. And according to our projections there, we may not recover 1.5 million. That is linked to the spending on capital, because we need to spend and claim from plans department, but I will elaborate as I address the expenditure on capital budget. On this is, I think we are fine. The other area that is a little bit concerning, the other area that is good actually, is accommodation charges on these homes, that's private leases. As a result of the renegotiation on leases, we managed actually to get better rates. As a result, the spending pattern then is below what we expected, but it's because of the savings that we've realized. Then I move to slide number 48, where I deal with the expenditure. For current payments, the total budget is 11 billion against the expenditure of 5.2 billion, which represents 48%. And I will then go into details there, especially the high risk areas. I'll focus mainly on maintenance. On maintenance, with a budget of 1.4 billion, we spent 914 million, which represents 65%, and it is above the guidelines, which we were supposed to be at 50%. So you can see that we are projecting to spend 1.8 billion by year end, which will result in to expected overspending of 414 million. But we normally manage that. The reason for that, if you don't have scheduled maintenance or you are not spending on capital infrastructure, as a result, you'll have lots of day-to-day maintenance. Certain things will break in a facility. Hence, then, there is a high spending on that, whereas in our infrastructure, we are not doing well. That's mainly the reason for that. Then repairs, we have 1.2 billion. Against spending of 335 million, which represents 27% of the spending against the budget. And there also we are projecting under spending of 548 million, which is also concerning linked to spending on infrastructure, but the DDG CPM will also provide the plans that we put in place to address the under spending on infrastructure. The compensation of employees, we have a budget of 2 billion with a spending of 916 million, which represents 45% of the spending. We also anticipate under spending of 217 million. I think the reasons are already highlighted by both of my colleagues why we are not doing well on compensation, but there is a recruitment drive that is being pushed to minimize the projected underspending. I think, the last one, which is concerning is turnaround budget, 157 million, with a spending of 11.7 million, which represents 7% of spending. It's far below, but there is also a program to improve spending on that item, which we hope there will be improvement by end of 31st March. Then, if I then move to capital payments, it's when we deal with capital infrastructure then. Refurbishment, we have 1.2 billion. And we spend 383 million, which is 31%, and we project underspending of 486 million. EPW Capital is 849 budget, with an actual spending of 240 million, which represents 28%, and I'm projecting underspending of 368 million. Then machinery and equipment, we have a budget of 55 million, with a spending of 9.8 million. We are also projecting underspending there of 34 million. However, on that one, we are going to improve because we are intending to buy more video conference facilities so that we can also minimize the cost of traveling. So that one is going to improve, and as we recruit officials, we will also buy laptops. So it's also linked to compensation. Then planned capital, it's when the colleagues were also highlighting issues of budget confirmation by clients. So that budget is 2.5 billion. The spending there is 745 million, which represents, which is a 29% of the budget. There also I'm projecting 1 billion underspending. So in total for capital, we are projecting 1.9 billion underspending, but as I said, there is a program that has been put in place to address that. But I must also highlight, construction is not like buying computers where you can buy them in bulk at once so that you can improve spending. Construction is a process where it involves contractors and all that. So it's not like to say by year end we'll come and say we'll fully spend the amount. We are trying to improve the spending. Then moving to slide number 51, it's just a spending per program against the budget. You can see program one, a budget of 936 million. The spending there is 36%. Real estate investment services, 44% spending. Construction management services, against the budget of 5 billion, the spending is 31%. That's where actually our focus area is currently, to try to improve the spending. Real estate management services, a budget against this budget of 7.1 billion, the spending is 42%. Real estate register services, against the budget of 104 million, is 29% spending. FM, against the budget of 3.6 billion, the spending is sitting at 47%. So the overall spending pattern is at 40% of the budget of 17.1 billion. The next slide on debtors, which is slide number 53, the total outstanding balance as at 30 September 2019. I must reflect on this one. Say, the model of billing when the PMT was established in 2006, that model that was agreed with National Treasury was that we'll spend first and claim later. That created a problem because when we started with a bank overdraft. And with the behavior of claims departments in general, in terms of paying service providers, we all know that departments naturally they don't pay service providers within 3 days. Actually, it's become worse if it's a government to government. With National Treasury cutting budget, it's become worse. Invoices of public works are not prioritized. Departments, they prioritize service providers. If they understand, then they will remember public works. So that's really a reflection of our debtors group. We have an opening balance of 4.1 billion. Against that amount, we receive 1.4 billion. The outstanding balance is 2.6 billion. The invoices that we've issued for this year, as at date September 2019, is 8.4 billion. Amount received against that total invoices issued is 5.8 billion, which represents 69% recovery rate. So the total outstanding balance is 5.2 billion. So below there is an age analysis that reflects how old our outstanding debtors. So for current, we have 963 million, which then demonstrates to say if departments take on average, which they do in any way, they take between 60 to 90 days to pay our invoices. So you can then see that we need injection of about 2.3 billion, because if you have 963 million, which is current, and if departments are not paying, it means then we'll always have a bank overdraft of more than 2 billion. So within 30 days, it's 663 million, plus 60 days is 961 million. So the total for 2019-20 financial year is 2.5 billion, and for previous financial years is 2.6 billion. Included in that amount of previous years is a disputed amount where claims departments are disputing, be it occupation, and some of the things are relating also to poor service by us. So it's a number of reasons why clients are disputing. However, in some instances, clients are disputing because they just want to delay paying us. The interventions that have been put in place, the minister has written letters to her counterparts. We are getting responses. In some instances, we've received money. In some instances, clients haven't paid yet. We also escalated the matter to National Treasury, attend some of the meetings when we meet clients where Treasury put pressure. So the other thing that we also did was to draft a billing agreement where we need to force clients' departments to pay in advance for any service that we provide to them. The other issue that is of concern, which we've taken a decision, is municipal services. If you look at slide number 54, municipal services is the biggest. We have 3.2 billion that is being owed by clients' departments. So this is a dilemma because we need to pay municipalities so that there is no disruption of electricity in our facilities and water. So we have to pay municipalities, but clients' departments are not paying. You're all aware that even Eskom is cutting electricity in some of municipalities. So we have to balance that, which becomes difficult for us. However, the decision that has been taken in that regard is to allow departments to pay directly to municipalities, which we hope it will solve the problem. But I must say it's not going to be easy. The letters were issued by the minister to all ministers. We are busy with projects to engage departments and municipalities for grant departments to take over. But we will still pursue recovery of this amount so that in the future we don't have a similar problem. Then the recommendation, we are recommending that the Portfolio Committee on Public Works and Infrastructure notes the 2019-20 first and second quarter financial, which is cumulative and non-financial performance, and advise on areas where the department should improve. Thank you.
Thank you, Aida. Okay. And I think it's time for members to ask questions and plans. Okay. Now the time. Now the one, yes, two, Mado, and Kevin. You can start another call.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation, everybody. Just with respect to slide 12, you're talking about the extension from large invoices and assets.
What's happening currently in the construction sector is that where a large contractor goes out on tenders for smaller jobs within the contract to SMEs, the idea being obviously now that they're empowering SMEs, SMEs are refusing to tender. And they're saying, just give us our package and we'll do the job. And a lot of that relates to their ability to tender, because many of them don't know how to do a tender. And also what's happening is that when a contractor tenders, they quote on the prices at which they can acquire product. But they get preferential rates because they're bulk buyers. Then a contractor, an SME comes in and they have to now tender on a portion of that job. And they don't get the preferential purchasing prices that the main contractor gets. So either they tender incorrectly because they're trying to fall within the price range, and they can't actually do the job for what they're quoting on because they can't afford to buy product. Or they come in, if they do tender correctly, they come in too high and then can't get considered for the job because now they don't fall within the tender requirements. We are essentially setting up our SMEs to fail by doing it this way because they just can't compete price-wise with the larger contractors. It's something that's going to have to be looked at when going forward, I think, to make it better for the SMEs to be able to actually tender correctly. So that could be where you're saying you have to keep going out and advertising, I think a lot of your SMEs particularly are just not in a position to tender, so they just kind of hope they'll get their 30% of that project done. So it's just an observation more than anything else. Then on slide 21, what are the movable assets? If somebody could just clarify what the movable assets are within the prestige fund portfolio that we referenced in here. Maybe other people know what that is, but I don't. Then slide 29, that's on the leases. Yeah, I must say, having four lease agreements as your first half of the year target is quite low considering the size of the program. So I hope that will obviously be a lot higher. I've been referring a lease agreement for the detector branch of SAP Florida for nearly 2 months now. There are 54 people now working in a boardroom smaller than this. The entire detective branch of the Florida Police Station are working out of a boardroom smaller than this. They have to do interviews, they have to do telephone calls, they have to do investigations. I did oversight there about 2 weeks ago because it was reported. Their lease, we knew last year that the lease agreement was going to expire and nothing was done. So they moved temporarily into the police station boardroom and it's now, they're leaving I think in March. Since then, nothing has happened. So if somebody, please, I've been referring it and sending emails, but I'm not getting any response on that. It can't take that long to secure a lease for the detectives. They can't work under those conditions. And then, on your energy, on page 32, I was at a climate change conference or seminar last week where they said that we have got between 10 and 20 years to do something about our climate change, and if we don't, it will be too late. So this has to become a focus area for everybody. So I'm excited that you're, particularly your water. I did a men's statement yesterday about the drought in the area I come from. Water is becoming a massive issue, and the fact that you're mitigating that is excellent. But we really need to now focus on clean energy as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to ask a few questions because it seems as if I've taken over Honorable Mike's job, but I'll try to stick to four questions. The first one, according to your report, your program one is understand, and that's your admin. And if your admin is not proper, nothing, everything is going to follow. Understand because of the vacancies that are there. So we need to sort out that admin problem of those vacancies. And then I would like to go to IDT. It seems as if IDT is a problem. And it seems as if nobody wants to do anything about IDT. IDT is a Schedule 2. And now it has come to our attention that $5 million was allocated to public corporations. What the intention of making sure that the day-to-day runs of IDT. And you've already given them the $5 million. What strategies are you actually putting into place to make sure that IDT runs independently and gets all the projects? Because even my colleague is saying that maybe we should move away from leasing and actually give those detectives their own building, whereby it should be a project, because you are spending more on hiring buildings from private owners and all those things, and we know that they always escalate their prices. And then you spoke about partnership with tertiary institutions, and then we must shift away from the academy. We already have learners that we are giving bazaars to. And the reason why you guys wanted to come up with the academy was to address the shortfall in the PMTE. And in the same breath, some of the entities are giving out bursaries. Why not take those learners and those graduates to come and address the shortfall that you have within the PMTE to make sure that it runs accordingly? And then you talk about, on slide 19, you talk about the list of NPOs. Can we provide those NPOs and where they are situated? So that we should also, when we're in our constituencies, go there and make an oversight. And then many job opportunities, but you've cut off on consultants within your department, and then use external consultants. We are already at a point whereby unemployment is very high, and you guys are letting go of people, and then you prefer using somebody else to do the job, whereas there was somebody you were trying to, because if a person is there, trust me, you spend less than to use external consultants, because that's the middleman between other people. So, and then there's a report that there is vacant state-owned properties. Where are those properties? So that we should be able to address the state of leasing from private owners. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone in the house. I've got quite a few questions, particularly on the CM. I just wanted to check whether does the department give any guidance, or do we get the UN on time as a department? From all the UNs, do we get them on time so that we consolidate our CM? And that the CM go on time to Treasury? And the monitoring of that so far, how are we in terms of monitoring? Of whether the UM submitted in the previous financial year is consistent with the one that is submitted this year, because one must speak to the other, and the CM thereof. Just want to check whether there is the
Are we able to monitor all of that? And going to the risks, what are the measures that are we putting in place, particularly in the erosion of the department's mandate? Because I don't think we want at any stage to put around another job to do. How do we combat that, or do we, how do we heal that? Because we have identified the gaps that this might happen in the near future because of our services as a department. How do we then ensure that? What are the measures or the plans that are put in place to deal with the erosion of the department's mandate? And should the user departments actually do decide to take over their own facilities, how, whether they have the capacity or not, it's a different story for another day, because there are a lot of constraints involved that they have to conform to. And again, lastly, on the issue of credibility of EPWP, we can never stress that enough, the credibility of EPWP. You find it from, well, mostly counselors, everyone would use EPWP for party volunteers and that. What can be done? Maybe you can advise, or maybe the colleagues will discuss this. What can be done to ensure that it does really assist in terms of poverty alleviation? Not that if I'm an employee of public works and my cousin's son is staying with me and does not have employment elsewhere, then they must be placed in EPWP in the meanwhile, because it does not serve the purpose. The purpose is to alleviate poverty. So what are the measures that the department will put in place to ensure that this does not happen and does not have any political interference in terms of controlling this problem? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, my first question is that in terms of slide 20 to slide 14, you indicated that you were unable to control budget because of the moratorium. Now, I just want to check if then, in terms of filling the agenda, I just want to check that any particular cost of the moratorium and over and above that, I also want to check a little bit the need of time from which this moratorium is going to end, because I think that the issue of dealing with the community is important, because if they are not filled with the community, they are going to end up and at the end of the day, the people are going to suffer the most. There are people on the ground. And as a politician, that's not what we want to do. That's number one. And number two, you have spoken about the issue of saying also to others, but 18, where you say that you couldn't reach your target on you and people who are living in the suburbs. Well, I'm actually seeing for me at least so I saw, because those are the ordinary issues that we have in our society. And even if very big people are not safe, we know what the result is. Something that we don't want to see at the end of our young people end up, you know, being used for protest because they don't have work. They end up, you know, dumping on that. When it has to take all the resources to keep them here and also improve their health. Now, I want to check if there's anything in place that is going to ameliorate this particular situation. And again, on the very same slide, we talk of having not been able to reach the target by a percentage of people who are living in the public. Well, I find it quite very successful. I mean, it's just like a research on the property towers. It's unpalatable that we are unable to reach just a percent. We have underperformed on that, putting the return in the target with a percent. For me, I think something is not right, and I believe that somebody is not doing things for health. And as we have seen, you were actually presenting that you are taking steps against people who are doing things that are not correct in the department. I think it's one other thing which you need to take steps to deal with the personal country who's responsible, you know, to fulfill that percentage and that certain demonstration. And all them about that check, I think the 2% is for me is like speaking in the face of people who are living in this country. 2% is quite very small. And looking at the number of people who are living in this country, I may not have the exact or scientific number of people who are living in this country. But I know that there's more than 2% of people who are living with disability that we can assist, and they are not named, and we are able to provide for people who are able to put in thousands, and yet we are unable to provide work to people or to assist people who are living with disability who are even less than far less than the number of people who are able to put. Well, the other matter, well, it has been spoken under 16 and other slides that there are disciplinary actions that have been taken, and also there are arrests that are taking place. Now, I just wish to know from the department that measuring all these steps that have been taken, is there any difference in committing fraud, corruption, and also in the misbehavior of people who are actually in the department? Because you must not just be excited about the thing while the thing is actually a solution. You must be able to see that there are positive changes with regard to the actions that have been taken by the department. So, I'm interested to know if there's any decrease as per the steps that have been taken to address some of the anomalies that we are seeing in the department. Well, the other matter here is in relation to slide 51. Well, I see here that you say we are talking about 40% that we have that far said. And by all sides, say, there's no way in the next 2-3 months that is left, we are going to reach 60%. And this tells you that this money will go back to treasure. And as this money goes back to treasure, then it means our people will have been deprived of a service. Now, it's one bad news that we have to come to terms with in this particular department. That we are going to, if we have spent, it will be less than 2%. That I can say without fear of contradiction. Now, well, I've been hearing that it is going to be there are good things that are being put in place to see to it that there's improvement. But this improvement, may I be corrected, if it will reach the project. If it will reach 50%, and if it doesn't reach 50%, because in actual fact, we shouldn't be using, honestly, not the size of being put for our people and community to our people. That we are spending so much less money when our people are in need of services. But this money should be used. We should have been using it for the things that we have. And lastly, that's at one, sir. Well, it was reported here that there is no compliance in terms of science in the municipality. Now, the department has then taken a few occasions. We are now going to pay the municipalities directly. Now, I just want to check, if this will not border on a breach of contract between those who are, that the department is dealing with, in terms of if that is or in terms of the work that we are, or if we are occupying any of our buildings, will it not be a breach in terms of their contract? Because we must be able to see some of the things that are going to create us problems. And we end up going to court for things that we could avoid. So I just want to check and advise the program on this particular matter. The last one says in relation to the training academy that it has been put on us. We don't know what are the reasons and for how long it is going to be put on ice. And then meanwhile it is put on ice. Is there any alternative way that we can make use of to keep it that way? Because look, the academy primarily it was meant to assist the senior people such as this and also young people. Now, when this thing is actually being stopped, as well as we have been reported here, it means that there is a delay on the improvement and the benefit that our people should be in fact getting. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the issue of empty buildings and the outstanding renting from government departments, buildings for which is in the name of government and the government is owning is actually an asset and a value for government. And if you do not attend to your investment or asset by keeping it intact and your maintenance is falling in the backlog, then your value on your investments will actually decrease by the year. So for the empty buildings, we must try to sort out this matter to all these buildings and to make use of them. Otherwise, I think the good thing for government will be at the end of the day rather to sell them because it's getting a bad investment in this space. The renting, outstanding rent from other departments, it's a problem that needs serious attention and I don't see to it that there's a solution on the way to solve this problem. I would say, from this my standard point of view, is if a client department can't pay, put him out of the building and put someone in there who can pay. so that you can make your money. Do you understand what I'm saying? Doesn't it help you keep someone there so paying and your maintenance falling behind because the person who's renting at you is not paying? So you'd rather get someone in who's willing to pay the rent monthly. And so that the problem can be solved. And then I just see on this report this was the 10.6 million which was allocated to the Parliamentary Management Board. Is it possible that we can just get a breakdown of this 10.6 million, where exactly what it's been, if that's possible? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. One will talk about the processes and the budget side. Chairperson, I think mine was the one that got the reports that are in front of us, quarter one, or such. Gaga take a very severe election that hits the road and but I want to believe that it thank God because right now it seems like the department is projecting like this report court. I'm not going to be thank God at any time. If you thank God that is can't we agree to do something and use this opportunity so that when I'm sure that the third quarter and the fourth quarter has to see the way back and it's the first time in my life in dealing with two quarters. But like I'm saying, it's not the fault of anyone because there is mathematics. But I think there is a room for maneuver. I'm not sure about what happened to my adjustment. If we were to say, you understand and maneuver this way to you, my adjustment was what? I'm asking why that opportunity, no, you did not envisage that particular. The main issue with us as policymakers is the issue of job creation. I am not sure whether the department in a particular name, if you were to consider, especially you have a case against you. By the client department in terms of the maintenance. You know that maintenance is there on the business. We grew up in a corner of the school, or for the gym, or in Sosila and the rest of them. I'm not suggesting that you don't empower my SMMEs and the company. But at least we have your core in provinces where you say, at least we have these people, Abba corner. About the maintenance, you know, and my experience has been very painful. 20 years when I was staying in Devon, every day before I get into the freeway, I pass a big company that is spending time. I see abantabani, many young and middle aged men who want to earn a decent living. They will even think that when you approach it through, they think that you are coming to the company. They are standing there almost every day looking for the job. Some of them are bricklayers, some of them in Ababapagamatar. They will stand there and begging for the job. And I'm asking myself, if you have people that are willing to be employed, and one of the things that I think you have not even explored, the issue of my co-op. When you give the job to the co-op,
if you call off in a banda about a little minimum of five. Because you have empowered five people or 10 people about owning this company besides Ukwenza in employment for the other people. I'm just thinking aloud that you cannot have a situation where we are saying we subscribe to our priorities by the president, job creation, but on paper we say no, we can't. What is there? Please, let us put our heads together and see what we can do. The issue of the small harbour, or then the issue of the cycling and the processing that one is used to. I'm sure that every next financial year we will see a strategic plan at least of Kobisa, your organogram. Ukuthi nazi i-organogram. I know that you are dealing with the infrastructure as added, but we'd like to see that when you are ready, I'm sure we see next a financial year. So that at least one is able to follow. I was listening to the gentleman there, talking, listening, David. And I was saying to myself, I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have listed this risk. What I would have done was to take this risk and insert it into the strategic plan so that I deal with them. But thanks for being transparent with us. Although it cannot be a business as usual every year, I'm sure that it's a starting point where you are saying, here are the things, but deal with them. Don't come next day and say, we told you that there is a risk and they are still here. The issue of the training academy, you know, my curiosity is not about the training academy. My curiosity is about the strategic plan that involves the need of a training academy. I don't have a view whether it's wrong or right, but I'm just thinking that I would have been in a position to tell in the best maybe it was a wrong or it was a right idea. I am not sure, but my curiosity is not about whether I should have, but mine is to say whether what informs in terms of a strategy. The issue of the EPWP and the youth. Is there no way that you can go back and package and bring a package of a program that will attract the youth? There are some of the youth that should not, or maybe I think don't categorize the youth. Because the youth right now, corner the youth is that yaduna kona poly. But there is this youth that has been to the high school, has been to the university. I don't see a package EPWP program that will attract them. And I don't see some of them. I don't see them making the home cargo. Nama iPad EPWP. But when you go to town, you meet most of them on the street. I think maybe we need to go back and diversify and do the packaging. Chairperson, I think one proposal that I would like to make, can we make maybe next year meet the finance committee on the issue of the debt between the department and the intervention by the treasurer. Maybe we may find each other as an oversight arm together with the portfolio committee so that we have the understanding that they may not even have known what the situation is. Before we can even think about the culprits in terms of the, because one of the things that you have not given us is who are these culprits
department, we don't know, but maybe to cure the situation, maybe we can say that. And I hope, Chairperson, that we will not close this discussion around the two orders, because the other order will mean 3 hours of discussion. And here we are sitting with two. There are things that we may be left to shape for the next meeting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start by appreciating the presentation to the conference of us. And also, Chair, I would, as the committee, we continuously raise our concerns in terms of the availability of the documentation well in advance. So this time around, I would like to acknowledge also that we did indeed receive the documentation well in advance, giving us the opportunity to properly scrutinize the documents and prepare us properly for the engagement. So we need to give credit where it's due. Firstly, Chairperson, I'm deeply concerned, my biggest concern actually, within the current economic as well as the unemployment rate that we are experiencing in our country. We have a situation in this department where we are informed that there's been a moratorium. We don't know until when it's going to be, but we know that there's a vacancy rate. So if we can get some clarification on where exactly at the end of quarter two the vacancy rate stands for the department. And also, Chairperson, when looking at the amount on compensation of employees, there's budgeted versus the actual expenditure, with a projected under expenditure of 217 million rand, it's a big point of concern for me because it's directly talking to bread and butter here. Bread that could have been on people's tables. And that's a big point of concern for me. So if you can then, when you explain to us the different areas of underperformance, and we see the different areas of under expenditure. Can you explain to us what is the impact of this vacancy rate or the non-filling of posts under the different programs on service delivery? You can explain that to us to start with. Then I'm not going to touch on the other issues that have already been touched, like the youth unemployment or the people with disability and other stuff. The other issue, Chair, that I want to raise is that when we look at DPW Program 4, we see there's a low level of performance, but we see there's a high level of financial expenditure. I'm not sure if I quite understand what is happening there. If you can just give us an indication or clarification so that I can understand it better. Then, Chair, when you look at, I don't want to touch when I look at PMTE and EPWC, especially with regards to that poor performance in terms of EPWP work opportunity of 539 against the target of 1,800. Can you tell us how you envisage that picture to change by the end of the financial year? And what are your plans that are in place to remedy that situation, because we know that
they preferred EPWP is one of our flagship programs that's been even acknowledged internationally. So we can't be mellow now on that. We need to move. We need to be our speed. And Chair, when I look at the municipal services, it has already been touched on, the outstanding debt on the municipal services. And we've been told that it's our social department, and we have that high level of debt. But when I look, Chair, at the current level versus the outstanding amount from previous years, that's a very high amount that hasn't been recovered from previous years. So which means that basically there's nothing happening. The amount is just increasing year by year. So when we look at the total outstanding balance of more than 3 billion rand, and you envisage to allow the departments to pay directly as from 1st of April, what are you going to do in terms of that, the outstanding amount that's currently there to make sure that you indeed receive that money? Then, Chairperson, when I look at slide number 32, I see there that in terms of Program 6 Facilities Management, it's been reported that in terms of the unscheduled maintenance, the low level of performance, and then the explanation there, comment there is, works for you inadequacy of the system, which reflects faulty controls from the design. Now, Chair, it triggered my memory in going back to, I was not part of the committee by then, early July, when the APP has been presented. But I'm here now and I've done my research. And I know that there was a promise being made in terms of the enterprise resource planning. And when looking at that, I know that there has been several system problems that's been encountered. And when looking back at the previous administration, I know that this Archibald system was one of the systems, including the Sage software purchase, that was introduced or supposed to be introduced to remedy the system problem, this old problem that we're having with systems. And when I go back in terms of our When we spoke about the annual report, and we identified some areas of concern, we spoke about the PMTE to provide progress on its road to clean audit that shows cost incurred for the rollout of Archibald, and we spoke about various other things, including the full update on the urgent need to capacitate the PMTE to unlock the value of the immovable asset portfolio. We spoke about the report on leases that shows costs incurred to private sector client departments, all those things. And we've agreed in that meeting that the action that should be taken is the department will go and strategize in the different areas, and they'll come back during the presentation of the quarterly report. They'll update the comment on how far are they in terms of the implementation to remedy those problems. But when I look at the presentation that we've received, I can't find it. So correct me if I'm wrong, and it's been an oversight from my side. So, Chair, I would really urge the department to allow our government to take its rightful place in the society. And this department is playing a key role. I won't relate to any other issues because then I'm going to speak until 4 o'clock and we don't have time. So I'm just touching on some of these issues. Can we please try and get our act together and speed up, because it's totally unacceptable for me when we receive the even if it's a prelim of quarter two, we receive the report with the anticipation that generally there would be an underperformance towards the end of the financial year. Generally, there would be an under expenditure towards the end of the year. And then, during BRRR, we were the ones who stood there and said, but we need this department to have this appropriation and what. Can we please just raise the bar? We don't have time. Our people need to come first. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The time now is 7:12, and the time must be done before or 12:30. But one question for me is, how did it happen that the contractors were appointed but could not do their work? That is the only question.
Chairperson, thank you. I'll ask my colleagues, all of them, have questions. I think we'll start with the EPWP, Mr. Anderson on their side, and then the HR and IT questions, and finance and construction, and that order, then M&E. Thank you. Stanley?
Thank you, Chair, honorable members, respective ministers and colleagues. Yeah, there are a few questions regarding EPWP. The first one was with regard to the list of non-profit organizations participating and the target that we have reported there. We will certainly provide the Secretariat with a list of currently contracted NPOs. We regard them as fully contracted, obviously, when we have a portfolio of evidence of the contract that's signed, and we will give you a geographical distribution, and we welcome the suggestion by the honourable member that they would like to engage in their constituency which NPOs are currently involved, and we will certainly provide the committee with that information. The question of the credibility of EPWP is an important one, it raises questions with regard to obviously also reputational risk for the expanded public works program. So we don't take them lightly. What we would like to urge members to do is where they see irregularities or undue practices with regard to the EPWP, be it around management or implementation, to report it to the Department of Public Works, be at infrastructure. We have investigated all cases, and that's the first comment. So it is difficult, obviously, to respond to a general statement, because we don't know which area it's referring to, but we would welcome to get the information, because in the past we have followed up. But as a coordinating department for the EPWP, we also have a responsibility to ensure that there are fair recruitment procedures in place. And to that end, we have developed what we call the EPWP recruitment guidelines that we have wrote, and we are consistently advocating with the implementing bodies to ensure recruitment. Just last week, as a matter of interest, we have seen in the city of Suwanee that they have implemented a what's called a lottery system, a fair system. Everybody, if you're interested in a to be employed on a particular project in the city of Suwanee with regard to EPWP, be it, doesn't matter which sector it is, you provide your particulars and the lottery is run, and obviously once you have been employed, you don't qualify in that same year to be employed again. That's just one example. And so, yes, we have seen in the past a fair amount of undue interference across the political spectrum. So we would like to emphasize that the purpose of the EPWP is to employ poor and unemployed people, and that it should lead to build social cohesion in communities and not serve as a divisive factor where communities are actually driven apart. So we welcome the comments, and we would investigate any irregularity that that's reported to us. There also has been a question with regard to the two questions actually with regard to the youth focus and the demographic targets in general, women, youth, and people with disabilities. And let me, with regard to the youth, let me just make the comment, Chair, with that. The EPWP is implemented across three spheres of government and across four sectors. So we have to distinguish between what the Department of Public Works as an implementing department for the EPWP is doing, and what the department is doing with regard to coordination across the three spheres. So I want to distinguish between these two, because there was a question with regard to the implementation of the EPWP within the department. And yes, the reference to the PMT in particular. And now, with regard to the implementing departments across three spheres of government, we go out of the recruitment drives to urge implementing departments to design or to build in a youth bias into their programs, be it in the Department of Environment, as you were saying, known environmental affairs, we know there have been a review. But in working for water, for instance, and working on fire, we have seen high youth participation, and often depends on the nature of the programs implemented. In other cases, and we would be also advanced the position that young people can benefit by working with experienced people. So as much as we urge youth dedicated programs, in certain cases, in other cases we're saying there's a benefit in youth working like for artisanal skills development programs where youth work with experienced artisans. So we want to have that healthy mix as much as we emphasize youth employment. And it varies across the different sectors. We will provide you with details in terms of youth participation. In some cases, it is higher than in other cases. Coming to people with disabilities, it is a bit more of a vexed question. And we have also seen, for instance, there are obviously in certain sectors, such as infrastructure, there are certain occupational health and safety issues that would simply prevent a person with disabilities to participate. For instance, it's a very pragmatic thing. And we have also seen varying participation. But the question with regard to what the department is doing is that we have engaged with the organizations outreach organization actually where people did deal with the disability issues. And we will be convening a conference, maybe colloquium, where a 2-day colloquium where the organization themselves will convene on day one and day two, will be open to the broader public, so they can share with us what they would like to see to advance to increase the participation of people with disabilities. We have had reasonable success in the non-profit organizations sector, and the programs lend themselves better also to participation of people with disabilities. So yes, the honourable member's not here now, 1% or 1.2% may seem, or 2% may seem like a low target, but we have to see it in the context of the broad range of programs and projects implemented. But our approach is that we would like to intensify the participation of people with disabilities across even infrastructure sector. Nobody can tell us it's not possible for a person with any kind of disability that they cannot participate in infrastructure environment. No, it is possible. It just takes for some creative thinking. And so we are doing some very clear engagement across the sector-specific areas. As you say, the infrastructure sector, this is possible. We know the social sector is easier, like for instance the ECD programs or home community-based care programs to get people with disabilities involved there in a much easier way. The last comment with regard to the unemployed youth coming from tertiary institutions. Our key focus is indeed, if one looks at the profile of the unemployment, it's like a pyramid. Obviously, the better skilled youth or people in general would be at the top of the pyramid and would be easier. The better trained people are, better skilled, better educated they are, it's easier to get jobs. And in the broad base of the lowly skilled people would be people with lower, maybe matric and below. But having said that, we have had, even though we focus on the lower broad base of pyramids, we have seen examples where people with, have become teacher's assistants, for instance, in the EPWP environment, so we do not discard them. What we would like to emphasize, I will conclude with this remark. In the public employment program environment, we're sitting with what we call often with a trilemma. Do we emphasize the creation of work opportunities? Do we emphasize assets and services created? Or do we emphasize employment? And there are trade-offs, because it is like, for instance, it's easy to achieve EPWP work opportunity targets. If you have 100 days of work and offer, you can employ 50 people for 2 days, and they will be paid less, and you will get 100 days of employment. Or you employ, for instance, 2 people, pay them better for 50 days, and you also get 100 days of employment, but you reach fewer poor households, for instance. So it's always a trade-off. So the key question is not it's not the chasing the target of 5 million, but also how many poor households can we reach? So I will conclude with that, Chair. I suppose it's the topic also perhaps for more dedicated engagement with the EPWP. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG, EPWP. Thank you once again, Chairperson, and also express thanks to the questions. There are 3 main questions I would like to respond to. The one is not related directly to my branch, but I think we're part of the team can contribute. It relates to the academy and what informed the academy and what also informed its suspension or removal from the APC. and also non-achievement of targets related to it. The academy performed poorly from within the professional services branch simply because it was a mandate that needed to be taken forward. However, it was not funded. And as a result, the branch was not able to take whatever work needed to be put together and take the academy forward because of that aspect. They engage in conceptual work, but the actual work relating to the actual setting up of the academy did not get much traction as a result. They even at some point explored the possibility of using online academy, but also students that are already within the pipeline, you know, to begin to form that. But then when the minister came on board within the sixth administration, receiving this report, he realized that we are actually fooling ourselves and the nation if we're going to keep within our plans an activity that we're not going to achieve. And hence then she intervened by then indicating that we need to find an alternative in the short term while we're able to find the funding that will drive whatever form of training intervention we have in place. The training interventions that are in place were looked at expanding into the academy. There are programs in place that incorporate students from ordinary school as part of that pipeline that are there placed on program by the department across the country and across all 9 provinces, and where dedicated schools are then adopted by the department and intervention are then done to improve the math and science results and metrics of those students and also persuade them to pursue skills within the built environment, infrastructure, construction skills. And once they've gone through the matrix, they're then placed on program and given bursaries and taken to different universities. That program is still in place, but it is not massified. And I think that's where the academy would have then looked at massifying, not just for the PMT and the department, but go beyond the department, but for the broader state and state sector. And I think that's the area in which we were not able to take that forward, insofar as that is concerned. The second matter that also seems to be cutting across all the questions emerging from the honorable members relate to the state of vacancies and the impact it has on performance and services in the property department. Between April 2018 and now, November 2019, we've had 2 moratoriums, and in between a self-imposed moratorium. And the first moratorium was when the current president came on board and then also appointed a new executive. The executive that came on board then imposed a moratorium so that he as well can familiarize himself with plans of the department and where we're going, and when he was satisfied, he then agreed that we can have this moratorium. While we're trying to implement that program, the period of the election came, and that is the self-imposed moratorium, where as the administration, without the political principal during that period, could not go ahead and begin to fill position willy-nilly and disadvantage whatever political result will come on board. And definitely, after the election, we had a new political principal, and the director general, not the minister, or the deputy minister, imposed a moratorium to afford the new political principal an opportunity to settle into the organization and begin to appreciate what plans we have in place to deal with recruitment. You know, recruitment are very strategic and very critical, especially with new political principal. You have to ensure that the required capacity is put into place so that the priorities and mandates that have been identified by government as a whole are able to be taken forward. So, minister has actually given us permission with the priority list that we've come up with to go ahead and fill in the positions. And that program is currently, as we speak, underway, and we anticipate that we will be able to fill all the identified priority positions within the budget made available, which the CFO managed to scrape the barrel and set aside about 200 million to fill in those positions by the end of this financial year. It must be concluded. We have to have these people in place, which necessarily does not mean those people start by the first of the year. They will start in the second semester. Some will start at the end of the year this year, some early next year, right up to the end of the financial year. So the recruitment plan is in place, and work is underway to do something about it. For the PMT as a whole, which represents 90% split between the DPW main board and the PMT as the core business of DPW, it has a total 4,962 such establishments, which if we break it down, it breaks down as follows. 4,296 are permanently appointed personnel. Then 666 are those appointed additional to the establishment on contract. And 3,836 is failed, and 460 is vacant. So we've already received a parliamentary question from this house on this very same matter, and which minister has duly going to send the response to today. Yeah, so that has been done in this regard. The third element, the other member is correct. We have as a department in previous occasion that we want to introduce a new ERP system, enterprise plan resource, in order to ensure that we're able to have an integrated end-to-end business system. That work is underway as we speak, and part of the challenge that we're reporting here on the Works for You, we realize that the data challenges in the Works for You would be a waste of time to begin to work on those controls and the data challenges. So obviously, we took all that data into the new system to update itself so that we don't do the developmental work on the legacy system that we're going to abandon. So that work is now currently being driven by the branch, and we're hoping that it will bring about improvement in terms of the control of data. But the major progress that we've made, and that is also going to leadership within the organization, it is the leasing portfolio. This, because it impacted on the finances to a greater extent, the CFO decided to take it on board and drive the implementation of that program. Because the implementation of the system requires business to participate. Remember, the system itself, functionality is 70% fine, ready to be used. All that is required was 30% customization, which then requires the businesses to participate. And hence, their lack of participation then will result in us not achieving our milestone. So in this instance, he drove the implementation of this in module. And as such now, all transactions are done strictly on application stage. And they've abandoned the use of a legal system, which was the DMAN. So in that sense, there's progress. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I think it's three questions that needed clarity. The first one is linked to the performance indicators for the movable assets under prestige. The movable assets referred to under prestige, it is the assets that have been provided to the ministers, deputy ministers, parliamentary villages, and this relates to the your movable assets, which will be the furniture and all the issues related to the furniture for the parliamentary villages, the minister and the deputy minister. Now the second one is relating to the 10 million in slide number 45 for parliamentary villages. The money is not being spent in the department, and it is allocated in terms of Parliamentary Villages Management Board Act, and mainly utilized for transportation of the parliamentary members from the village to the parliament, including, I think, the family members, whether the kids going to school. So that is the purpose of the budget allocation. The last one is relating to program 4. The budget that is too big, as presented in slide number 40, where we indicated the budget is around 4.4 billion. Now, if you go to slide number 45, where we are presenting the transfers, you will see of the 4.4 billion allocated in program 4, 4.2 billion goes to PMT as a transfer, and the first item under construction and industrial development is 76 million. The second one, which is the CBE or the Council for the Built Environment, is 52 million. Agrima South Africa, 31 million. And the last one will be IDT. Now all of them, when you add them, they come to 4.4 billion. And all of them are the transfers to the entities, not the money that is being spent in the department. The balance of approximately, I think, 37, 38 million, it is for compensation of employees and goods and services, which I think is almost 50%, almost 17 million or 18 million allocated for compensation of employees and 17 million for goods and services for policy and construction branch. Thank you.
Thank you, members, for the question. I will deal with the issue where the honourable member asking whether we will reach 2% spending, where he said he needs assurance. My colleague will help me for the main issue for understanding on the construction. But I must say, we will be above 60% based on the past events. I was looking at the October report. It has improved a little bit. It's 47% overall in terms of spending cumulatively. So I must say that yes, it will be above 60%, but the colleague will then elaborate. Then the next question relating to finance was the breach of contract, I assume, with landlords. Yes, with landlords, we fortunately, when it comes to municipal services linked to contract with landlords, plans department do pay that area where landlords are affected. I think that area we are not too worried about it. Then there was another comment to say we must exit another organ of state. You can imagine if there are issues in parliament, we must shut down the savings. I'm not sure it would be world news. Imagine if we close the police station, what will happen? But we do take the comment, but the minister actually, when she wrote letters to other ministers, her approach was to say, if there is no positive response, the matter will be taken to cabinet to escalate to that level. And I do welcome the comment that was saying maybe a finance committee through this portfolio committee needs to be a session dealing with the matter, and we do welcome that. And I must say, even the victim department, we must still also as the department pretend that we are also doing well. There are instances where we don't do well as a result, claims departments are not paying. So we do acknowledge also such challenges. There was also a question of erosion of the mandate of the department as a result of poor service delivery, which also is reflected on the financial performance where claims are not paying. I think it's an issue also that needs to be discussed, because you have claims that are holding budgets, and they can do it. They wish. I always say when clients want to take over our function, doesn't mean if police is unable to do their work, everyone must open a police station to prevent crime. You need to deal with the problem where it exists, which means is to capacitate the department to deliver as expected. Which in that finance committee, one of the discussions is to say maybe this budget of infrastructure must come to the department so that we can manage it properly and facilitate the department. So we'll really appreciate
such discussion, which will be led by this portfolio committee. The adjustment of the budget through the process of treasury where we need to surrender funds. This one is a little bit hurtful as a CFO because you engage colleagues to tell you that we are sure CFO, we are going to spend money. They will have plans and all that. So it's a difficult thing because I do agree that there are those processes which actually we communicated with the colleagues to say, look, if we foresee underspending, can't we surrender? But difficult as a CFO, we will say we don't have money to spend, I go and bid with treasure, I get the money, now I must be the one declaring that we can spend. It's a catch-22 from the CFO point of view. But yeah, we just need to do our work as the honorable members that say we need to get our house in order. We do accept that. I think ensuring understanding on compensation and the impact has been addressed. Then the last issue that I want to address is the issue of municipal services, especially the previous year balances, which is too high. And we do accept that part. That's mainly as a result of the energy savings and water savings. As much as we want to save water and energy, we had to appoint service providers to put infrastructure to save water and light. And when you build clients are saying, no. Okay, the model that we used was that service providers will put infrastructure and they will pay for it. Then when there is a saving, then there will be a cost sharing in terms of the saving. If let's say you save 50% of the usage, then the service provider then will charge 50% of that saving. Now you go and present the claim to the client department. The client department says, no, I will pay what the municipality says, but forgetting that if that infrastructure was not put, the client would have paid much more. So those are the things that cause that amount. It's more than $1 billion actually, what clients are owing around the municipal services. So, but we are dealing with that. The last issue was around the issue of audit action plans and all that, as it was discussed when we presented our annual report. Actually, we had a discussion with the DG on this to say how do we bring it back to you, because it was not part of the invite. Actually, DG asked me to prepare a letter through the minister to request a session for that. I'm not sure if that's the process we must follow or we must have a special session or where this committee invites us. Maybe we just need guidance on that. But we were ready in terms of presenting that. Thank you. Thank you, Patrick.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I've got a few questions on construction. The first one I would like to respond to, it's the under expenditure matter. As the CFO has already indicated, we identified that the trend of spending is not appropriate for this current financial year. The department in the past has not been very consistent in its spending patterns on construction, and it has warranted a discussion at ESCO level to see how do we address some of the inherent challenges that we find ourselves in. Because without resolving these challenges, in the next few years, we'll have similar patterns, and we want to get to the root causes. Some of the issues that we've identified is in our system, we have contractors that are poor performers. And these contracts that are poor performing, historically, you find that a contractor has perhaps been terminated in another province, and then they find work in another province. So we are making sure that measures are in place so we can restrict poor performing contractors such that they are not able to repeat the same thing over and over again. And we find ourselves in a situation where we are having a pool of contractors that are non-performing. The other level of improvement or discussions we're having is on the clients. Clients have budgets allocated to them. And during the process where we are responsible for deliverables, we constantly have to go to clients to request for money. We ask for money before we go out on tender. It takes time. We ask for money from clients after we have gone through the procurement process before we award. It also takes time. And these are some of the inefficiencies that we need to correct, because if we don't do that, as much as we are responsible for deliverables and we depend on other dependencies, we need to make sure that those dependencies are within our control. So certain mandates and functions need to be with us, because as an implementer, you must be directly responsible for the budget that you're running. The other level of improvement that we have currently is an acceleration plan that is in place. We've communicated to all principal agents and all the contractors that they must improve productivity. I have started to see improvements in the last month of October and also in this current month of November. The average spending that I'm forecasting is plus or minus 580 million per month for us to be able to reach an acceptable target at the end of quarter four. This month alone at head office, we processed about 300 million rand worth of invoices. This excludes the other regional offices. So I'm confident that for October, November, we have started this increased acceleration process, and we're going to constantly monitor it until we achieve the forecasted targets that I've set. The other question, honorable members, was on the issues of SMMEs, that we are failing SMMEs. SMMEs are vital in the construction industry because they are the future. And they are not often very advanced in how they price for work, in understanding the scope of work, and being able to take the scope of work, put the necessary rates, quantities, and get the correct cost. It's always a challenge that our SMMEs don't finish work on time, on budget, and on quality. That's why we have to be very innovative in how we address the issues around the SMMEs. One other initiative is a collaboration that is important between the private and the public sector, particularly around funding, because SMMEs have challenges with cash flows. They get projects, but they don't have the initial capital injection. Because in a project environment, you are expected to use your own money first, after you have done certain trades, you get paid for that, and then you continue. The projects that become successful are the ones that, as an entrepreneur or a business, you put in your own money, a lot of it, then you kickstart the project. From there, it runs on a momentum because you keep on claiming the money and you continue. And most of the projects that are being run by our SMMEs don't start off correctly because of cash flows. And it needs better collaboration in the industry on solving issues around funding, including the lawmakers, which is National Treasury. We have also included other innovative programs to develop the SMMEs, like the learnership programs that are under EPWP that are ongoing. There are three-year programs that we're also initiating on incubating the contractors, and they'll be attached with mentors. It also improves on the development on SMMEs. These are all the initiatives that we think, if they are all running and optimized, the issues raised around the failure of SMMEs, those can be easily mitigated. Due to interest of time, let me pass on to my
colleague. Thank you, Lua, 1 minute.
thank you. There was a question around the quota 3, is it ready? I'll respond it in one minute on a process basis, process perspective, but then also looking at what we can possibly do, should we be requested by the committee to present outside the period. The reporting timelines are guided by DPME, Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. There's a guideline that we've given. And those guidelines are embedded in an electronic system called the EPPRS, electronic quota reporting system. And then how is it structured with this is that the financial year April to March is April, May, June is the quarter one, but the reporting on the system preliminary is happens in July. And then our process is then in July is that the preliminary is what's reported on the system, but then after July, which is August, we then start the verification process, which is verifying the POE. And then quarter two then starts in July, August, September, but the reporting is in October. So if the question about quarter three is that quarter three is in October, November, December, but the reporting is in January. So what can be possibly reported is that if we are requested before that, is that you'll see that we'll be able to report on the activities towards achieving those outputs that are included in the APP. That's what we can do. So if you go to the color coding that we have presented, it will only limit us to the red and the amber, but it will not show the yellows and the greens.
Okay, thank you. Deputy Minister, with your permission, I'll just address three outstanding questions quickly. The one is regarding the UN, that's the planning instrument we receive from clients. It reported in the last quarter, and last year, no more than 30% of our user departments submitted credible UNs. The others don't submit, or they submitted incomplete, or their DG submitted unsigned. So it's not helpful when we prepare our strategies. That's one point. The other one is regarding the strategic risk. I want to reassure the committee members, two members raised the issue that we should include it in our plan and mitigate the risks, and we do that. We have risk registers, and we also monitor our risks on a quarterly basis like we review our performance. And then finally, the deterrent for mismanagement and misbehavior and fraud and corruption, I think we should engage the committee in a full session, because we've conducted between ourselves and the SIU now nearly 3,000 investigations.
Sure.
And we have a huge story to tell about what we found. We've disciplined several hundred people. I think it's 292 people we've disciplined. And we've also made 100 referrals to the NPA for prosecution. And there are about 50 cases with the police for investigation. But I'd just like to share with you perhaps the disciplinary actions, which is where we have more control. We've had 316 disciplinary actions. 265 were finalized. We've had 12 dismissals and 49 written warnings. We've had 35 final written warnings. We've had 18 suspensions without pay. And then we've had several others, such as resignations, which takes place when somebody is going to be dismissed. 23 of those, and then 51 are still in progress. And we referred 44 to the police for further investigation where corruption was detected. So we have a whole portfolio of information to share with the committee, including the fact that the SIU have had 5 proclamations where we've assisted them to clean up our environment in leasing and prestige as well as construction. So we're doing a lot of work there, and I propose that we have a separate session, you know, to share all of it with you. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Over to you.
Once more, thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me start just on the last point, because for me, what becomes critical is how we avoid some of the issues, strengthening our ability to monitor and to oversee. Currently, the legislation is silent on those employees who jump ship just at the tail end of a protracted disciplinary process, because those who know that they are corrupt and they know that they will be found guilty will protract the process through doctor's notes, this, that, and the other. And once they see now that they are at the tail end, just when the chairperson is finalizing the verdict and outcomes, they resign. Now, as the employer, your relationship ends.
Now, the good practice says then that when that happens, take it to NPA. Now, that's another protracted action, which may not see the light of day. And in the meantime, this person who jumped ship goes to another department, continues to do what he or she was doing. And you, as the previous employer, cannot block that person because of the technicality that you could not convey that finding. I think we need to find a way to deal with that. Because crooks stay in our system just by exploiting the loose ends that need to be tied. And I would therefore make that appeal to the committee to say, let us together assist each other in looking at legal ways and means to close that loophole. But coming to the untransformed built environment, we have all those bodies that are listed on one of the slides that funds are transferred to. And the sole purpose of their existence is to transform the built environment. The amount spent there and the results do not correlate. And given the responsibility to me by the minister to look after the entities, we are now in the meeting just before we close with a view to first talk about restructuring them, because there's quite a number of duplications we picked up in our interactions, but secondly, to kind of harness the way of doing things such that we are able to influence their operations in a towards a manner that deals with true transformation, especially of the skills base. Because most of them, yes, one deals with contractors, but most deal with, if you talk CBE, and it's a smaller council, they deal with transformation of the skills environment. And that is where we can talk as public works about the entity, about the academy. But if there is no change in the regulations at that space, we can talk until we're blue in our faces. So sometimes it just requires us probably being fresh from outside, having to deal with issues, not because you know it is done in this way, but because you want to understand where are the bottlenecks and where can you change. I think that's the approach we are taking. And therefore, the issue of the academy will be laid on ice until we get that space right and until we ensure that we pool resources, especially in an environment where there are no, we all complain that resources are limited. To have to spend on something you are not sure is going to give you the desired outcome is another risk, which is not desirable. And therefore, honorable members, be at ease in understanding that we have not abandoned the idea of academy because we are not interested in having our skills base, but we want to utilize the minimum resources allocated to the department for maximum benefit of young people in a manner that will at the end make them productive. That's really the main purpose. We may say that it is not all what gloom and doom. And yes, the EPWP program has challenges here and there, but those challenges are not insurmountable. The amount of interest that that program has attracted internationally, it is that now there are a number of countries that would want to partner with us with a view to enhance their own youth programs, but also for us to learn what they do differently to enhance our own program. And we have scheduled meetings for early next year with a view, supported by a number of international bodies, those that gave the award to the ETW program, because their interest is to see that program being an international model for youth development. And therefore, we will be coming up with a number of changes next year after our interactions with our international bodies. My last one is on the quotas, because it's something we can deal with easily, being supported by our staff. The SOM, sector oversight model. If only we could, even if it is through a rule or through the practice note, whatever you call it, but this thing that says quota one, according to some, you submit a report, you ask questions in writing. Quota two, you meet and go through everything, follow up on those issues that were not clarified in writing, and deal with them. For me, if we implement some as is, as Parliament, it will go a long way in clarifying what needs to be done, when and how. So I do want us to implore our support as the committee to assist us there. I think that with the kind of work, we seem to be having a lot of challenges. But I can safely say that there's so much good that is taking place in the department. Actually, I felt guilty coming back from Diki. Diki is in the heart of Mthatha, right in the heart of the rural area, where the department was handed over to the Department of Justice, a court, which is 100% user beneficial. It accommodates disabled, it accommodates climate change, it accommodates everything. The same was done in another one in Pumalanga. That one was easy because of its size and its magnitude. It was handed over by the president himself, because the designs that we are now running out respond to climate change challenges, respond to issues of disability, to this and that. And therefore, for me, whilst we are doing that, we need to expand our space and ensure that now if you talk to the Department of Justice, they're smiling, because what has been produced on their behalf is that which is desirable and that they qualitatively, that which they feel proud of. And therefore, this is what we would want to see happening across departments, and we would want to deal with the administrative issues that make us unattractive. And therefore, that slide which shows the risk, I do want to say that it's a risk, yes, listed there, but it's a risk that we're doing something about in terms of changing the mindset and how we do our own work in a manner that gives confidence back into the department. With those few words, Chairperson.
Thanks, Department and the Deputy Minister. On our agenda, we're just with Minister and the
department head for coming. I wish you a Christmas and a Happy New Year. And the name of the Kenny remains that one thing which can actually for them. So all the best and thank you very much.